This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
So, are you the man with the Midas touch?
Well, to be honest, before the camera started running, I had to ask you what's the Midas, and then you explained me about Greek or Egyptian gods. No, don't go away.
Welcome back. Chelsea get a win. Manchester United get 3 points, and the Minnows, they struggle in 2016. This is European Football Weekly, and it starts right now.
I'm gonna wait till the beat go away.
Anthony Martial. Easily away from Fernandes. Martial, and flicked it freely by Wayne Rooney. He's got Old Trafford roaring again. He's scoring again. And Manchester United have this game in the palm of their hand again.
What a strike. Wayne Rooney back into the scoring column. It's been a long time, about 2 months, Thomas.
Yeah, any hope of him continuing this surge of scoring that we saw over the weekend? Do you have any hope of him?
I'm still thinking about it. We'll get into that. We'll get into Real Madrid needing a new manager and finding one, as we talked about after El Clasico.
The Barcelona way.
The vote of confidence was not much of a vote of confidence. It was Florentino Perez buying some time.
Well, when is a vote of confidence ever really a vote of confidence?
It is never really a vote of confidence. This is European Football Weekly. We hope to get your votes of confidence via iTunes. Leave us a review. That would be nice once in a while. You could also check in with us on Twitter, hashtag EFW590, at DanRiccio590, or at UnfitRef. And of course, we want to wish you all a very happy new year, or as Nonna Riccio would say, Thomas, happy new you.
Happy new you.
A very happy new you to you and yours.
Broken English.
2016. Yeah. Happy new you. She hasn't figured it out that it's a year, but otherwise it would be bon anno.
Oh, well.
How would you say it in Greek?
Well, you say chronia pola, so many years.
Wow.
What you say.
That is difficult.
Or kali chronia, you say that too. That means have a good year type of thing.
All right. Well, there's your Greek and Italian lesson.
Don't say we don't teach anyone anything.
This is European Football Weekly on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So let's talk about some of the interesting results from the weekend. And we know that the Bundesliga and the Italian Serie A and the Liga is taking some extended time off for the holidays. Whereas for the first time in a long time, La Liga didn't, and we'll talk about some of those games.
That was odd.
Especially with Kieran Canning, who's going to join us from Spain, as Real Madrid have fired Rafa Benitez and they appoint Zinedine Zidane. We'll get to that later in the show. Let's start in the Premier League, though. You heard the goal off the top. That was Wayne Rooney finally getting back into the goal column, getting the winner for Manchester United 2-1. They defeat Swansea at Old Trafford. Question is,
yes,
what does it really mean? Has United turned a corner? Because that's the question that everybody's asking right now, Thomas.
Yeah, and none of us can really answer that. All we can say is a great confidence boost for Wayne Rooney, and naturally, anything that's a confidence boost for Wayne Rooney is good for Manchester United. So we'll see moving forward what he can do. It's only his third goal in 16 Premier League games, so not really setting the world on fire, actually quite the opposite. So I just like how he did it in Rooney fashion. Yeah. It couldn't have been just like a little tap and just get, you know, or a penalty.
He's missed some sitters over the last couple
of
weeks.
Yes, he has. So he gets this one. He's like, hey, guys, I can still play soccer.
Yeah, I can still play this game that we call soccer in this country and football around the world. I didn't see really anything to be optimistic about from this result, other than they got the 3 points.
I was just about to say that's the only thing.
You know, like the first half finished scoreless and United scored right out of the gate in the second half, and Rooney gets the goal ahead after Swansea tied it. But there's a couple of things here. They still look drab for the most part, still looked slow, still looked not very inventive in the offensive third. And at the same time, you're playing a Swansea team That is just dreadful. They're an absolute free fall. They fired Gary Monk.
They're still looking.
Still looking for a new manager. So this guy that's in there right now is just like, yeah, I'm here right now. Don't know if I'll be here next week.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, you know, like, we'll see what happens. And Swansea's just a team in an absolute mess right now.
And
so,
they were a team that all these smaller teams would look at and aspire to be. It's a shame to see them this low. And I was just glad that any United game didn't end with a scoreline of 0-0 because they've had 7 of those this year. And it was a treat to see a goal being scored, whichever side of the ball it came from.
Apparently Adidas would agree with you.
Oh, yeah.
So they signed Adidas signs their big deal with United to be their new
kit
manufacturer taking over from Nike. And this week, Adidas is basically saying, yeah, we didn't expect this from Manchester. We were expecting, you know, a little bit more of an offensive approach from Manchester United, which has been.
Yeah, basically the CEO of Adidas said, the shirt sales are up. Great. Never been better. But the style of play on the field is not exactly what we want to see. That's after giving £750 million over 10 years.
Bring back Sir Alex is basically what Adidas is saying, right?
Hey, they're selling shirts. I don't know what they have anything to complain
12
about.
12 goals in 15 games for Manchester United.
With all that star power, and they can't find the target.
Well, one of the guys that they spent a crap ton of money on is Memphis Depay, and he's done
the bust of the season.
Right now, he's looking like it. Memphis Depay is certainly
shocker.
How much money do you think Man U spends in this January transfer window right now? They're already linked to Felipe Anderson with Lazio. They've been linked to Leroy Sané from Schalke.
Liverpool, Manchester City, also in the running for
that. Manchester City's always been linked to that guy ever since he started making
And he'll probably go to Manchester City because they have the cash. Yeah. But, I mean, I don't see Man United holding their purse strings. I see them going after whatever they can grab. They need it. They're Manchester United. They need to change this. The fans.
Oh.
My God.
Yeah. The fans are absolutely.
if the last two seasons were horrible, and they're saying this, just the play is awful for them.
They are more upset than the Adidas CEO at this point with Manchester United. They get Sheffield United in the FA Cup.
League One side.
And
should win.
Like, That's kind of a game where you want to, like, if this is any indication, this win, this 2-1 win over Swansea is any indication of a turning point, you want to see United go out there and get, I don't know, 5 goals against Sheffield. Like, just put the boots to them.
Well,
show me something, right?
Well, on paper, you would hope, like, you look at it and you go, yeah, absolutely, they could score 5 goals on Sheffield United. But nowadays, even when you're playing the lower tier teams, they play a different style. They sit back. They let you take. They absorb the pressure. They're very tough to break down. So those score lines are very rare to see. But you almost need this.
Yeah.
For the fans, for the sponsor, obviously, right now, what we're hearing from Adidas. But you need it for anyone who's related to Manchester United in any way. They need to hammer them.
And Louis van Gaal, interestingly enough, for whatever reason, over the last couple of weeks, while we've been away over the holidays, Boxing Day and December 28th, the games and this latest one, for whatever reason, the yells, the shouts for Louis van Gaal to lose his job quieted down a bit. Do you think he's just one result away from those going back into being a forefront of the conversation?
Well, fans are fickle. We all know this, right? So imagine if they lose to Sheffield United. Imagine. Don't you think that they'll be calling his name and not in a good way if they lose to Sheffield United?
Yeah, there was 75,000 at Old Trafford this weekend. But as we've heard over the last few shows, like, people are growing increasingly upset with Louis van Gaal. And if results don't continue in a positive way,
he needs a run of at least five victories.
What I think it was, because all the talk was, you know, they were selling Mourinho scarves outside of Old Trafford at one point.
Did you see that? Who would buy that?
I don't know.
As a United fan, why would you buy that if he's not sitting in the dugout?
Exactly. And I think what United is kind of weighing right now, at least the top brass, is weighing, all right, is it worse? Like, we know what we're getting with Louis van Gaal. Like, we don't necessarily, we're worried about the firestorm that may come if we hire Mourinho and things don't work out.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what you're getting from Louis Van Gaal. You know what you're going to get with Mourinho? You're going to get 3 years, and I can almost guarantee you there's one or two trophies within those 3 years. So what's more important to you? Long term?
Yeah.
Or right now, as critical as it is for Manchester United supporters and how they're dying, for fans who were just, you know, entitled, and they would get trophies like, they didn't really appreciate it because, like other fans, we don't see trophies
spoken
that
like
much.
A true Liverpool
exactly,
fan.
Exactly, exactly. So they don't appreciate it. So when you see that when there's what 3 years now,
yeah,
without a trophy, what do you think? I think they have to sign Mourinho just to get the fans off their back.
I think the other thing that's quietly being thought of right now is Ed Woodward, the CEO, is kind of saying, if I fire Louis Van Gaal, that's kind of my last card to play. And then they're looking at me as much as they are looking at the next manager of who to fire. And Ed Woodward, I mean, his transfer record has been awful.
It's been atrocious. But I also see there's a changing of the guard at Manchester United, where Woodward has always been the joke since he's been hired. Yep. Like, fans always laugh at him, and he screwed up the deals and this and that, whatever.
He's made some nice sponsorship deals, though, clearly. Yeah,
of course. He's bringing money into the club. That's really all that matters, right? Money, right? Generating money. But the thing is the guys who didn't want Mourinho to start with were Sir Bobby Charlton and Sir Alex Ferguson. Two guys that still, they're kind of puppeteers at the club.
Yeah.
Whatever they say kind of goes. But after this, I think they've lost their power, that aura of control that they have, you know, like, you know, pulling the strings. I think it's gone. I think Woodward has, people want to see him do something like this, I think, more so than anything.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting times with Manchester United, and we'll continue to monitor that situation and whether or not they do make a move at the managerial position.
Will Swansea have a manager?
I don't know. That's another question for another day. Right now, Swansea's looking as bad as Aston Villa. And that's bad. That is really bad.
Really bad.
Who finishes higher this season? Manchester United or Leicester? Leicester. Or Manchester United.
Look, if you listen to our last pod, I was very there was a lot of sarcasm when I was talking about believing in Leicester. Because I don't. And we're seeing it now. They're falling. Vardy's getting injured. Man United will finish ahead of Leicester.
Leicester, unable to defeat Bournemouth this week, settle for a 0-0 draw at the King Power Stadium. Riyad Mahrez missing a penalty, and 10-man Bournemouth squeak out a point against Leicester City.
Vardy hasn't scored in a while.
So that's two straight games where Leicester don't get results. They lose to Liverpool, draw with Bournemouth.
They don't score.
Vardy gets an injury, he's out for a couple of weeks, and they haven't scored a goal in two games. We told you before the holiday break, this period is going to be a big sign as to where Leicester go
from
here.
If they could stay healthy.
And it, you know, not great. Didn't turn out as great as you would have hoped if you are a Leicester City fan. And the results, the fixtures, do not get any easier from here with Leicester City. They get Tottenham in the FA Cup. Two straight games against Tottenham, both at the White Hart Lane.
Ooh.
FA Cup, and then again in the Premier League. Then they get Aston Villa away after that. Stoke at home. Liverpool at home. Man City and Arsenal. That's their games through Valentine's Day. So
when is the Aston Villa game?
These next six fixtures or five fixtures are going to be incredibly telling of what Leicester is by the end of the season.
When's the Aston Villa game?
The Aston Villa game is January 16th.
And it's at Villa Park?
At Villa Park.
If Aston Villa haven't won since the opening day of the season, right?
Yeah.
If they still have, what are the chances? If that happens, you know the dream is dead.
Yeah, it would go right in line with everything that's happened in the Premier League this season.
Doesn't make any sense.
You know, if Leicester's out of the top five by then, or out of the top four by then, you know, you're looking at then talking about Europa League spots. Because I still don't think Leicester has the staying power to be in the top four. We'll have to see. We'll have to see. And this injury to Jamie Vardy certainly does not help.
Doesn't help.
So Leicester with a 0-0 draw against Bournemouth. Let's get to your Liverpool.
Why do we have to?
Yes. West Ham 2-0 win over the Reds this weekend. This comes right after they topped, at that time, the Premier League leaders in Leicester City 1-0 on a goal from Christian Benteke. Kind of going in line with everything that's happened with Jurgen Klopp so far. Had some really great performances. Had some really drab performances. Barely squeaked past Sunderland.
It's like night and day.
Yeah, and they've had some really bad games against some poor teams. And West Ham go ahead of Liverpool in the standings with this win as well.
Who isn't ahead of Liverpool at this moment? Yeah, well, but no, it's the story of the season. And this is not Klopp's team. He's making do with what he has. And he's trying to find out his system. Some of the players aren't living up to their potential. Sturridge still, injury after injury. Henderson re-aggravated his heel, hurts. Skrtel's out for 6 weeks, I think 4 weeks left. I mean, Benteke, hit or miss. Really, I think he's won Liverpool like 9 points. 3-1-0 victories. But he does not look to fit in that system at all.
You said hit or miss, and he missed a pretty big sitter. As well in this game.
The previous game, he missed an open net.
Yeah. Yeah, the Leicester game. Sorry, yeah, he missed that big
that
one.
Was horrible.
I'm getting my Benteke misses mixed up because Liverpool really didn't have a chance against West Ham.
That's the thing. It's one step forward, two steps back all season.
And it kind of goes a line like right there with what Brendan Rodgers was trying to figure out is and what this Liverpool team has brought in terms of players, and there's just still too many inconsistencies, whether it's because they're bringing in too many young players, whether it's because they're bringing in players that just aren't good enough. You know, a guy like Philip Coutinho, I've talked about it so much. He can produce these unbelievable moments, these unbelievable goals, and you see him just oozing with talent. But at the same time, he's kind of dumb. Like, he doesn't really understand the game all that well, sometimes.
He's dumb with his age. Yeah. Let's say he's dumb by age.
Well, he's starting to get into his mid-20s. He's still learning. Has gotten better over the years.
This is a very difficult game, Dan, that we love.
I know.
You know, so yeah, I agree with you. At first it was his passing, his distribution was off. He's gotten better at that, but like you said, sometimes I look and I'm like, why are you going that way? Or do
what
you
are
not
you doing
yeah,
in
what
general?
Are you doing? What do is not your see purpose? Him on your left. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know what your purpose is? To fake and go to your right and hit a curler you hit all the time. You know?
that's your move. Do it. All right. Let's hear from the great one, the happy one, whatever you want to call him.
The normal one.
The normal one. Yes. Yeah, that's what he called himself. Yeah. Jurgen Klopp talking about his anger after this 2-0 loss to West Ham.
The first half, of course, West Ham had chances in the first half, but after set plays, throw in, bad defending, blah, blah, blah. We showed in the halftime. So, and then second half, we had our moments again. 5-1 on the sideline. No win. Nobody won the ball. Cross Carroll against Klein. Thank you. No chance for Kleine again. And header 2-0. And then you saw again. That was what makes me obviously today angry. Because you saw in each situation when we start playing, fighting football, then we had a moment. But scored no goal in this game. Yeah, so our responsibility, no day for being disappointed, only day for being angry about ourselves.
Wow, not really pulling any punches there.
No, and I read something that he was so angry that he gave the players, when they got back to the dressing room, the silent treatment. Like, he wouldn't speak to anyone.
Yeah.
He didn't want to hear it.
It's almost better than yelling,
though. Yeah. I don't want to hear your excuses right now. I don't want to hear why this happened. Just leave me alone. And it's like, you look at Klopp and you go, that would scare me more, him being silent, than him speaking and yelling at me.
Yeah, exactly. And let's just hear that money clip that you had in there one more time, because it's too good to only play once.
Cross Carroll against Klein. Thank you. No chance for Kleine again. And
poor Nathaniel Klein. Like, he's the only player that got kind of some sympathy from his coach.
Yeah, he was. And you know what? I said it to you before we started the pod today. It's hard to find a player of the season so far for Liverpool, but it would have to be Klein.
Like,
he's solid game in and game out. So, yeah, good on him that he doesn't get any. He gets a little pat on the back by the boss.
No chance against Andy Carroll, who scores the goal in this game, was pretty good. We've seen these types of games from Andy Carroll in the past, and then it all just amounts to nothing because you're just waiting for the next injury from Andy Carroll.
Because the next thing we're hearing is England. Andy Carroll for England.
Yeah, exactly.
Andy Carroll for England. Every time an English player does anything, England.
Of course.
It's foolish.
He's going to play for England. Let's hear from the one, the only, Slaven Bilic, talking about his big man striker and his new hairdo, Andy Carroll.
The whole thing was great. Andy was brilliant. Not because of the goal. Not because of the goal. I mean, with his performance, I mean, everything. Defending, holding the ball up. I think every ball that Adrian hit up, and we hit quite a few, he even held it, or he flicked it, then he defended, then he was tracking back to be on Lucas or John. When we had the opportunity to press Sako and Lauren, he was there. It was really good. And now he looks fit to me. And basically, we are talking a lot about them. And we are all Andy this, Andy great, Andy whatever, Andy England, Andy that. Now he's fit. And it's all about him now. Is he going to look after himself, train, work hard, rest to maintain this position, this fitness, or to even make it better? I mean, and then, but only then, he will become a great asset for us.
So I'm kind of reading in between the lines there, Thomas.
I think we're on the same wavelength here with what we're hearing.
And it's not really a secret, Andy Carroll's adventures outside of the football pitch.
He's a knob.
He's a party boy.
Yeah.
He likes to enjoy the nightlife and do all kinds of different stuff. And
some might say douche.
Maybe.
A little bit.
Right.
With the hair, you know, he kind of looks douchey to me.
You sound like an upset Liverpool fan right now. I understand that.
Why is it always
called Andy England, Andy that?
Andy England, Andy that. And basically,
right there,
to me, what Slaven Bilic is saying, it's up to Andy now. It means stop partying.
Focus on your football.
Get your act together. And let's go on a bit of a run here. Let's get some form here. Let's keep pushing on.
Because it's not about you and making it to England. It's about the team first, right? You play well, it's good for us. And basically everything that he said is probably exactly what Carroll's doing.
Yeah.
Like, why would you say that? Let's read into it a little bit. Why would you say that if he's not displaying that type of behavior?
Well, exactly. And I think Bilic is smart enough to know that everybody kind of knows what goes on with Andy Carroll and how dreadful he's been over the last couple of, like, not dreadful, like, he's had moments where he's been a very good player for West Ham or Newcastle or whatever, not really Liverpool, but you know, he's had some big moments, and you see so much out of this guy, this big towering striker that can be so dominant at times, but he's just a knob.
Yeah.
He doesn't put in the work that it takes to be a consistent player game in, game out.
Can you not draw parallels to him and Mario Balotelli? Just
a
tad. All the talent in the world.
Right.
But they're just knobs.
Yeah.
It's just a waste of talent.
They don't get it in the grand scheme of things. Let's quickly run through some of the other big results. Arsenal get a 1-0 win over Newcastle United. Yes, Arsenal are 2 points clear of Leicester on the top of the Premier League table. What happens if Peter Cech doesn't cost his team 5 points the first two games of the season, right?
What did I say? What
then
did I say?
7 points clear right now.
What did I say? 12 points better or 10 points better? I still believe this, and we'll see it come to fruition.
But he's cost them 5 points. So he's been playing from behind after the first two games of the season.
Listen, I'm not going on your math, okay?
Okay.
I'm not buying your math. But if they don't have Peter Cech, where would they be right now? Because he's won them.
They don't have Mesut Ozil. Where would they be right now?
True, but he's won them a lot of games, and he's kept them in games.
Yeah.
So let's not crap on Cech just a little too much.
Arsenal's best players this season, easily. Alexis Sanchez had his, poor or five games before he got the hamstring injury. Ozil, game in and game out, has been unbelievable.
The amount of assists
for, like,
he has
the last 3 months.
The amount of assists he has now is staggering.
Yeah, he's almost beating last year's record from Cesc Fabregas. And Olivier Giroud, lately, like the last month or so, a month and a half, Giroud's been unbelievable. He got the assist in this game as well for the Koscielny goal.
That's another player that
talk about it all the time.
No, but so. I seem like I believe that he has a lot of talent. I've been watching since Montpellier. He has a lot of talent.
Yeah. I don't think he's a knob. I just think
his head's gets pulled from the, like, his vision gets pulled from the pitch and onto other things. I just find that, like, with all the stuff that happened on Twitter and everything like this.
Yeah, you know? And his little foray with adultery, that was always a good story.
Just say sorry to your wife. Why do you have to tell the world?
And the last game we'll get to, Manchester City getting a 2-1 win over Watford, scoring twice in a couple of minutes' time to get the win after looking pretty horrible for the first 80 minutes of the game. And I love Yaya Toure. Like, we look back to the Arsenal game where he scored that unbelievable goal, so nonchalant. He did the same thing here. Like, his goal, his equalizing goal, it was just so casual about it. It's just like, yeah, okay. Why don't you ever try, Yaya Toure?
Exactly, because you look at it and go, if it's that easy, is it a switch that you just say, ah, I feel like scoring now?
Yeah.
Because that's what he makes it look like. Like, he can pull that off at any moment. He just chooses not to.
Yeah. Hashtag EFW590. You want to chime in on any of the things we're talking about here today at DanRicho590, at UnfitRef. When we come back, we're going to talk to Kieran Canning as he joins us to tell us a little bit about what happened at Real Madrid today.
Plenty of questions for him.
Firing Rafa Benitez, bringing in their B-team coach, Zinedine Zidane. The only time he's ever been mentioned in the same sentence as a B-team.
Third tier.
So we're going to get to that. Lots of questions coming out of Madrid today. Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos, this is European Football Weekly.
And we are all Andy this, Andy great, Andy whatever, Andy England.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Lucifer, son of the morning, I'm gonna chase you out of Earth.
Hey, maybe one chance for Valencia. Alcacer in front.
He's in.
A chance for Negredo. Negredo denied by Navas. Gomez, but wide, end to end. But no one can claim a goal.
Because of Keylor Navas, because of the Costa Rican Real Madrid, Madridistas, get down on your hands and knees and worship Saprissa. Look out!
Bale on his left, and he launches it high.
The ex-Saprissa man at the other end just saved the game for Real Madrid as the referee finally blows a whistle. And in doing so, gets a signal for my nurse to enter the commentary booth right now. What a heart stopper. What a wonderful game of football.
So when I check him, my last in hand, and if him slip, I gone with him hand, I'm gonna put on a iron.
And there it is. Valencia and Real Madrid play to a 2-2 draw, and that is, as the song would suggest, the devil being chased out of town in Rafa Benitez leaving the Bernabeu, Thomas.
A question for you.
In exchange for Zinedine Zidane. I'm Dan Riccio. This is European Football Weekly. He's Thomas Michalakos. Our producer and wonderful technical director is Emil Delic. Yes, you have a question?
So what does Rafa Benitez have in common with Manuel Pellegrini, Wande Ramos, and Vanderlei Luxemburgo?
They were all former Real Madrid managers?
Who never won a trophy.
It's a rare...
In this century.
Yeah, it's not too many of them haven't gotten away with at least one trophy, well, what, I guess.
Well, Florentino Perez, what, 11 managers in his time, you said?
Yeah, 11 managers in insane. 12 years under Florentino Perez. Joining us now to talk about Real Madrid's managerial change is Kieran Canning of the Agence France Press. And he's got a lot of different stuff on this on the interwebs, so you can check him out at Kieran Canning for links to all of those. Kieran, thanks so much for joining us. When you woke up this morning, did you expect this to happen?
In truth, no. when I woke up this morning, I was in Valencia, having been there for the game last night, and the general sense after that match was that a draw, albeit that wasn't a great result, also wasn't a terrible result in the circumstances. Real Madrid went down to 10 men, and Mateo Kovacic sent off with about 20 minutes to go. So in those circumstances, away point at Valencia, although they're not having the best season, it's always a difficult place to go. And bearing in mind that Barcelona also hadn't won this weekend, so at least Real Madrid hadn't lost any ground on Barcelona, would be enough for at least a stay of execution for Benitez, that, you know, the things aren't so bad that he'd be sacked at the moment. And even most of the Spanish papers and most of the well-informed Spanish papers led with that this morning. And then the story just seemed to sort of turn on its head about midway through the afternoon. Leaks started to come out that there was going to be an emergency board meeting, and once the wheels were in motion, it seemed pretty clear that Benitez's time at Real Madrid was done after just 7 months and 25 games. And possibly the thing that did for most, as you said, with Zidane now coming in, that there was, if not a ready-made replacement there in terms of an experienced manager, someone who is very much loved at the club by both the fans and the players, and that's exactly what Benitez wasn't, and what in the end has cost him his job.
It's interesting, Kieran, because I have a theory on this, and you tell me if I'm wrong or not. After the El Clasico destroying of Real Madrid by Barcelona, it just felt like this is kind of where it was going no matter what with Rafa Benitez. It's almost like Florentino Perez didn't want to fire him then and make it seem like it was a major, you know, panic move, whereas now it's, you know, okay, things weren't really progressing and we've decided to make this change now.
Yeah, well, to back that point up, for example, they're closer to the top of the table now than they were after losing to Barcelona in that 4-0 game. What is quite interesting, especially now that he has only lasted the 7 months, is that Benitez, you never really got the impression that Benitez was doing things his way. He kept changing for the demands of the club, and the Clásico was a good example of that, that the team he put out that day was very offensive-minded team, very open team, and Barcelona took complete advantage of that. But you got the impression that one, he was under pressure to name the players he did that day, because that's how things work at Real Madrid. The stars have to play no matter what. And he was almost a sense that Benitez was right of saying, fine, okay, have it your way. And if this goes disastrously wrong, at least it's not on me. But there was no sign in the last few weeks of him managing to impose. And when I say his style, we're talking about the style that we've seen from Benitez's teams throughout his career, especially at Liverpool, firstly at Valencia, where he had a lot of success, and then even at Chelsea and Napoli. Normally tended to be, if not defensively minded teams, and certainly well-organised, compact teams that maybe weren't so free-flowing, but, you know, were hard to beat, didn't concede a lot of goals, whereas Real Madrid in recent weeks have been exactly the opposite. And last night's game, being a 2-2 draw, which could easily have been 3-3 or 4-4, was a good example of that. And I think that'll be the biggest regret for Benitez, that if he was going to go out, then he should have at least have gone out or tried to go out on his own terms and imposing his own ideas, rather than trying to fit around everyone, whether it be the president or the star players in the dressing room, who never seem to have a particularly good relationship with. And because of that, it's, you know, ended in disaster for him.
Yeah, I look at Rafa Benitez and I find him as an opportunist. He's opportunistic. He wins trophies like crazy because he's at clubs at the right times. But now, after his sacking, and like you said, he should have went out on his own terms. Has he become even more of a joke now in the football world as a manager?
I think joke's a bit harsh. It's interesting how defensive he got in his press conferences towards the end, you know, trying to defend his own records as a coach when he was being questioned. Continuously talked about the fact that he'd been the manager for many years and won many trophies and had great success. But the questions about Benitez's appointment, never mind his sacking today, I mean, his appointment in the summer was the fact that he hadn't won a league title in over 10 years. The only time he has won a league title was with Valencia. Obviously, the Champions League at Liverpool really stands out, but as great an achievement as it was, there was also a lot of luck in that. I never remember the great comeback 3-3, but Milan also missed a lot of chances in that game, and Liverpool eventually won it on penalties. So, and the trophies he's won since then haven't been major or big trophies. You know, he won the cup in Italy, he won the Europa League with Chelsea, but he hasn't delivered in the league or in the Champions League. So I think he'll really struggle. I mean, for almost anyone from Real Madrid is down, because there's very few, if any, clubs of that size in the world. But I think he's going to struggle to even get jobs back at that sort of Liverpool, Chelsea level, and maybe now he'll take a role at maybe a smaller club in Spain or in England, because he's not going to get offers of that level based on his record in his last few jobs at Napoli, Real Madrid, and especially going back another few more years at Inter Milan, when he followed Jose Mourinho and left in similar circumstances to his time at Madrid after just a few months.
The vote of confidence in football is a joke. We know that. That for sure we know it's a joke. But Florentino Perez called Rafa Benitez the solution just a month ago. Last month, I believe, he called him the solution to the problem. He's not the problem, he's the solution. Zidane comes in. I don't know what his deal is. If it's just to the end of the season, maybe you can shed light on that. But how can you take Florentino Perez seriously when he comes out and he says to Zidane, as president, I am proud to have you by my side. I know who you are. Impossible does not exist. This is your club. You have all my confidence. How much confidence can that be for a manager that is just managed in the third tier of Spanish football?
Well, I think the difference is it's not any manager that's just come from the third tier. The difference that Zidane has over Benitez is the fact that he is loved by the fans and very much respected by the players. So both the fans and the media won't be on his back straight away like they were with Benitez should things start to go wrong. The interesting thing is one of the points you've raised there, Madrid haven't mentioned yet whether it's going to be just until the end of the season or for a longer contract. I would imagine it would probably be until the end of the season for now, until they see how things go. But as long as things aren't disastrous, then I would imagine he would continue on. And although the demands at Real Madrid are ridiculously high, I mean, you mentioned earlier on that this is Perez's 11th coach in 12 years in total, over two spells as president. So it's pretty much a given that if you don't win things, then you're out. I think Zidane will be given that little bit of leeway this year, just because he's coming in already 4 points down on Atletico. Barcelona are 2 points ahead with a game in hand, so in possibly 5 points behind Barcelona. And as long as he didn't do disastrously badly in the Champions League, I imagine he'll get through Roma in the last 16. And if they go out, say, in the semi-finals, as long as they go out not being thrashed, for example, by Barcelona, then I think he'll continue on next season. But the problems associated with Zidane are obviously his lack of experience and whether he'll have the tactical nous to go with what we all know, which was he was a fantastic player, and quite often the best players don't make the best managers. But with Real Madrid this season, as I was saying earlier, because the players didn't seem to be following Benitez's instructions, or at least following the pattern of what Benitez has asked from his previous teams, that you almost get the impression that they're not losing any tactical discipline by getting rid of Benitez and bringing in Zidane, and at least the atmosphere around the club will be significantly better. You know, the respect in the dressing room will be there. There won't be players and coach being booed by their own fans before the kickoff of every game at the Bernabeu. You know, the atmosphere should change and be far more positive. And even maybe just that impulse could push them on for the rest of the season, because they've got the players there. The if things click, there's no reason why they couldn't produce a comeback in La Liga and go on to win the Champions League again. I mean, this time last year, Barcelona were in crisis, and Luis Enrique was very, very close to losing his job. They did a massive fallout with Lionel Messi, and then the next year, Barcelona went on and won 5 trophies. So when the talent's there, there's always a chance that things could turn around. And I think Perez has looked for that change in atmosphere around the club, and actually, most importantly, he knows that by bringing in a popular manager like Zidane, then it might buy himself more time as well, and that the tension's not going to be on him and poor decisions that he's made with Zidane in charge.
He is Kieran Canning, at Kieran Canning on Twitter. I know you've had a busy day and a long day, Kieran, so just one more for you before we let you go, and we need it quickly because we are running out of time, but I guess what I'm looking at here with this hiring of Zidane is, and you kind of touched on it there, is the players respect him. And we know that they had a falling out with Jose Mourinho. Seems like a lot of the players didn't really get along with Rafa Benitez either. Carlo Ancelotti was a big-time players coach, so we didn't hear too much rumblings about that with him. But overall, managing these egos, you need somebody that they respect. And that's, I think, maybe the biggest reason that Zidane gets this job.
Yeah, and I think that that's why Ancelotti actually was the perfect manager for Real Madrid, and that he's the perfect guy. Again, he might not be the best tactician, but he's the perfect guy to manage those egos and keep everyone happy in the dressing room. And usually when a manager leaves Real Madrid, normally the press are unhappy and the fans are unhappy, and most people accept it. But there was quite an outcry when Ancelotti was sacked in the summer, and the folly of that decision has been shown today. In fact, Benitez only lasted a few months. The other thing is that Zidane actually was Ancelotti's assistant coach as well for the first year that Ancelotti was there, so the year that they won the Champions League and the Copa del Rey. Zidane was his assistant, so he was already in the dressing room, he's already worked with the players, he's already coached a lot of the players. So he has that, especially as well as having the respect for the player that he was, he has that the relationship with them. I think it's quite clear, the other thing that Real Madrid are maybe in the way of a prayer here, but what they're hoping for is that Zidane can have a similar impact to what Guardiola had at Barcelona. The idea of a club legend taking charge of the B team, first of all, to get a little bit of experience, and then moving on to the senior team with Guardiola. It worked exceptionally well. He's the most successful coach in Barcelona's history, won 14 trophies in 4 years. And if Zidane can recreate even half of that success, then it will be a very good decision.
He is Kieran Canning. Get a lot of his work. Find it on his Twitter account, at Kieran Canning. Thanks so much for this, and great stuff today, and we really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon, Kieran.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
There he is, Kieran Canning. What we want you to do on Twitter, using the hashtag EFW590, what managers, what great players have made great managers? They are few and far between. We were talking
right about, on the same path.
We were talking about a couple of them before the show started when Zidane was named. Like, Cruyff is one.
Kenny Dalglish, great player, yeah. Great manager, won with Blackburn.
We kind of debated on Pep Guardiola and Carlo Ancelotti, both who were very good players.
Very good players. That's why they make great managers.
But not like, you know, generational players. Like Gus Hiddink, good player again there too, right?
Yeah, Gus Hiddink. Again, Ancelotti was a great player. Guardiola was a great player. We're not saying that, but not Zidane levels or even Dalglish levels. Yeah. I mean, they weren't known
faces of generation.
Exactly. They were great players.
They were generational type players.
Like, and they're the example of the ones that turn out, because most of the time it doesn't. And I kind of disagree, though. I think the spotlight's going on beyond him huge right off the bat. They're not going to give him a grace period.
Yeah, we'll see how this works out here on European Football Weekly, as we always end the show with Creme de la Creme. Cash rules everything around me. Green gets the money. Dollar, dollar bill, yo. I hope you don't steal mine. Go ahead.
My creme de la creme for this week is Andy, my manager doesn't respect me, Carol.
I'm glad you didn't steal mine, because I'm going with Toronto's very own, everybody's favorite, Jermaine Defoe. couple of goals for Sunderland as they get a 3-1 win over Aston Villa. But hey, who doesn't beat Aston Villa these days? They are 12 points off of safety. 12 points!
Well, Bournemouth is one that didn't beat them, and Leicester might be the other one in a couple weeks' time.
Unbelievable. Thank you very much to Kieran Canning. Thank you so much for listening. This is Dan Riccio. Thomas Michalakos back again next week with European Football Week.